Dun, 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 dun. Gonna do a good show today. Dun, 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 dun. Holding up my Blu-ray. Dun, 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 dun. It's called The Long Kiss Goodnight. Dun, 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 dun. Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson. All right!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
Oh, yeah! Ooh. Are we dancing or are we doing the Trump inauguration fist bump? Sorry, damn it. All right, I didn't mean to start political. It's not political.
We're dancing.
That's not political. It's just what he did.
You gave me two options. It was option A. We're dancing.
Did you see that?
I sure did.
They did a gif with him, and they put a penis in his
stroking
hand.
A dick.
And he tried to get it removed from the internet. That's not how things work.
Nope.
But okay.
The internet is forever, folks.
The internet is...
I learned that the hard way.
Yes. I've learned that the hard way,
Don't
too.
Don't Google my name.
Yeah, if you Google my name and porn, a sketch we did comes up.
Yeah.
It's called Porn Voiceover Artist. Go check it out. Anyways, this is way off topic.
No, it's not.
It's a funny sketch. Anyways, hey, I'm Ben Begley. Welcome to Guilty Movie Pleasures. And with me, as always, is my partner in crime, one of the funniest guys I know. What's your name, dude? What's going on?
Jesse McIntosh. Good to see you guys. Good to see you, Ben Begley.
And I just set you up like with super high expectations, too. One of the funniest guys I know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just a dynamite human being.
Yeah.
Amazing singing voice.
One of the best.
One of the greatest
freestyle rappers
I've ever met.
I was turned down from American Idol because I was already their idol.
Yep.
And they were like, we can't have someone so talented on United States airwaves.
It's important. You out Susan Boyle, Susan Boyle.
Mezzo
soprano is your forte. Anyways, I don't know.
All of these things are true.
Such a weird...
I'm the most interesting man.
This is the weirdest intro I think we've ever done on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, don't get confused by my triple pack, which I don't think you can see, which I realized every time I hold up the Blu-ray in the intros, when I watch the video, most times it's reflecting so much you can't even tell what it is. So I'm like, we're doing this movie that you can't see. But today we're doing The Long Kiss Goodnight. Not to be confused with Domino or Point of No Return in this Warner Brothers triple pack.
We're going to be
triple pack for $5.99, by the way.
Yeah, we're actually, our show today is on the triple pack.
It's on the triple pack.
We're going to focus mostly on Long Kiss Goodnight, but it's on the triple pack.
Some of you know the extreme difficulty we've had getting this show to feature this movie. Back when Josh McCougie used to host the show, we had fans suggest The Long Kiss Goodnight several times. And Makuga only gets things via disc on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of stock the one time. The next time we tried to do it, he got the disc, but it was broken. And I think that broke him for the movie. And we never did it. And now we're finally talking the Shane Black Christmas classic. I forgot this was a Christmas movie.
It was a very Christmas movie.
Like this movie,
very Christmas-y.
Shane Black is all about Christmas and gunfights.
I'm pretty sure the inciting incident was Christmassy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
actually,
she's
the whole
in the parade.
Reason,
yeah.
So for those of you who haven't seen this movie, just the basic premise, and we'll go over the whole plot. Gina Davis is a housewife who has amnesia. She's basically Jason Bourne, but a female, and she thinks she's just a school teacher. And then some bad guys come after her after seeing her in a Christmas parade, and we find out that she's an assassin for the government. A much sexier, much more badass Jason Bourne.
Well, that term is relative. Jason Bourne.
It's pretty badass.
Pretty badass, and you know, some would say
you're
pretty
right.
sexy.
You're right. And let's say equally sexy.
I'm not going to say he's not.
Let's say equally sexy, equally badass. This is the female counterpart to Jason Bourne.
Yes.
If the two of them could team up in an Avengers-style movie, I would not be mad.
Yeah, Jason Bourne and
you're
History
right. Jason
of
Bourne's
Violence.
Awesome. Jason Bourne.
Jason
awesome.
Bourne and History of Violence. This movie was sort of a fusion of the two. And let me say this: Jason Bourne, History of Violence, and Snakes on a Plane.
There we go. Yeah, yeah.
Those are the three things, movies that sort of fused together to create this.
I saw this movie back on VHS. I don't think I saw it in theaters, but I remember thinking it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And specifically, I remembered Sam Jackson, spoiler alert, never dying. Like, just relentlessly getting fucked up in this movie and never dying. And I had a blast watching it then, and I had a lot of fun. Some of it doesn't age as well as I remember, but for the most part, this movie is still ridiculously fun. It's for 2 hours. It's a solid 2 hour running time, but it moves. I don't feel like it really bogs down too much.
Not at all. It was interesting.
You've never seen it, right?
I had never seen it. I saw it for the first time this afternoon. And I don't know how I missed it. Like, this is right up my alley.
So
this
fun.
Is a great, like a super fun, like very, very like funny and self-aware movie.
Yeah. Shane Black's so good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He has like action-y mic drop. Like, there's a lot of those lines, like, where everyone's holding guns at each other and they all have, like, a witty quip.
He's like a, he takes, like, the Tarantino stuff where they have witty stuff, but he makes it quick. And it's almost like Tarantino and David Mamet combined in a way, where it's like these quick little witty, every character has a quirk to them,
yeah,
which is what makes me think of Tarantino. But don't get me wrong, Shane Black isn't ripping off those guys at all, but it's in that same universe of like quippy bad guys and good, where all the bad guys have fun little moments and every character in this movie gets at least one good line.
Gets one of those lines. That's why you do action movies, right? Yeah, to get those lines. And everyone, like...
That's where I would say that this is more fun than some of the... Although I love the Bourne movies. Don't get me wrong. But the Bourne-ish movies, like all these other super serious action films that came out around the Jason Bourne franchise, sometimes it gets so serious that you need some levity.
Yeah.
You need some stuff to shake it up a little.
I mean, there's probably like a sweet spot in between the two, because Jason Bourne is like he's a very like silent assassin.
Yeah.
Like he gets in fights and then
I
he walks away.
Don't get me wrong.
He walks away from the fights and doesn't have like a line to say to the corpse that's lying on the pavement. And in this one, like every single confrontation had like a round robin of lines.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
But it was great. It was great. And there's also like sort of two distinct films within the film. Like at almost the halfway mark, I had a moment where I was like, we got to be drawing sort of close here. And that was the moment where she bleached her hair and switched back into the Baltimore persona.
Yeah. Charlie Baltimore.
And it was literally exactly halfway through the film.
Yep.
So there are two pretty distinct films. And the end of the movie sort of bleeds back in, so it sort of brings it full circle.
Yeah.
It was...
There's some absurd shit, and we'll get in. Mm-hmm. I want to get right into it. So let's get into the 3-minute plot in under 3 minutes. You ready in the booth, Anthony? We're going to try and do this, okay? You ready?
Uh-oh.
To do our countdown, Anthony? All right, perfect.
He believes he's ready.
So I'm going to count down from three. We're going to get that clock started, and I'll start us off, and we're going to try and do this in 3 minutes. Ready in the booth, and 3, 2, 1. So we start off with all these like really cool like photos and guns being loaded. You're like, what's going on? And then we have Charlie, aka whatever her name is now, as a school teacher. She has amnesia. She's giving you a whole backstory how she wound up. She was on a beach. She just had a suitcase. That's it. She marries this guy, or she's dating this guy. He has no questions about it. He's like being really accepting of everything. And then things start to creep back to her. She's in a Christmas parade waving, and this criminal in jail sees her and is like, no, fuck you. And somehow he gets out of jail.
He gets out of jail and he shows up to her house and he starts shooting up the house and she like leaps into action.
Snaps the neck.
Yeah. She kills. Oh, so fuck.
Oh, the deer.
Yeah, she hit the deer and she kills the deer and the guy was trying to like grope her a little bit. Anyway,
we'll get there.
But so the assassin comes and he shoots her and then Samuel L. Jackson realizes
who's been hired.
He's been hired
by her.
So he shows up to her house to take her away and like sort of figure out her history. They have like a postcard. That's what they're going.
They end up, they get to like a train station or something at one point where they're, I forget how they get there, but there's
they call her like immediate superior and the guy's like, yes, I'll meet you at the train station.
His
phone has been tapped by the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they beat them there and there's a shootout at the train station.
What happens is as soon as they show up there, there's basically these guys just open fire in the middle of everywhere.
Yeah.
Which by the way, we find out that this is all a covert government operation that's trying to cover up the fact that they're working with bad guys. Yet they let these bad guys show up in public, no masks on, and just open
broad
fire.
Daylight, open fire,
so open
in
fire,
a train station,
huge gunfight, everything. And then they find out another guy on her list you think is her fiance, but you realize it's actually a code name. All these guys were targets that she had because she's a government assassin and she's lost her memory like Jason Bourne. She shows up, he starts drowning her in a wheel mill thing, and she turns, she remembers everything while she's almost drowning in this freezing water.
Yeah.
Shoots him
in the leg,
fucks up everybody.
They escape. So then they get to the hotel,
yeah,
and she's like, I'm done with you, Samuel L. Jackson. And then she goes out on the street and she's about to be apprehended, and then Samuel L. Jackson comes and he saves her life and he's like, I'm here to save your life. I was thinking of that line, that's why I'm so late.
Yeah.
And then
so good.
And then
they go because they realize that there's that her kids in danger, so they go there and there's a shootout at her old house. Again, no cops ever show up. There's an amazing part where the shotgun blast blows a hole in the wall, and she throws her daughter through it and perfectly into the treehouse.
Yeah.
And they escape there. They save the daughter. They get the daughter. The daughter and her, they all get kidnapped, and they end up in a oh shit. Okay, I'll just finish it. They end up in a freezer, and they're freezing in there. And then she filled up a baby doll with gasoline, and she lights the thing, and it blows a hole in it. Sam Jackson, you think is dead because he. When that happens, he blows up and flies through
the truck. The truck is a bomb, and the government is going to do a terrorist attack to get more money to fight terrorism.
Yeah, and then they get on the bridge, and there's a shootout, and she flies up the things, and the thing blows up, and die screaming, motherfucker, boom, and then they're with the family again on a Sound of Music type farm. Wow, there's a lot more in this than my brain could handle.
Well, this is what I was saying about there being two distinct movies, and it like affected the way I remembered the movie. Because like what you said about her throwing her daughter through the hole, that was what happened initially when the guy escaped from jail and he came and shot up the house with the missile launcher.
Yeah, that was earlier.
Was like one of the first things that happened.
Was it?
Yeah.
Holy shit. God, this... Okay, so I saw this really late on Monday night, and I'm sleep deprived with having a new daughter, so my brain may not always remember things as well as I would like. But let's just start from the beginning, because there's so many absurd things. I want to dig right into this, because I know we got to get out of here with a show coming up next. But don't worry. We still have like 35 minutes, everybody. So calm down.
We're only going to use 5 of those minutes. Out, all right? We're going to power through.
You know what? Let's just start off with the first sound clip, clip number one, because this sets up kind of her whole memory thing. There's this big voiceover in the beginning. It sets up the whole world we're in. Can we play clip number one?
You do what you have to do.
Nice. Is that a permanent sound clip now? No, that's no one's bad. You can play that clip however often you'd like.
8 years. Except for my name, all traces are lost. I used to hire expensive detectives. Now I'm down to the cheap ones.
Sam Jackson.
Doesn't seem to matter. The woman I was, the one I used to be, she's gone. I've kissed her goodnight.
Ah, see? I like how they subtly kissed her goodnight, and then you're like, ooh, so the whole movie is a metaphor for the long kiss goodnight, where she let go of this persona for a long time, but now she's saying now it's a quick kiss good morning.
It's a lullaby? She's emerging from a slumber?
Yeah, I think it becomes a quick kiss good morning.
Just a peck on the cheek?
Or a hello good evening tongue fest?
A tongue fest.
I got weird.
Hashtag tongue fest.
Tongue fest. There's some great bands playing at tongue fest this year.
I heard it's sold out already. There's no way to get tickets.
I want to start on one thing that jumps around a little bit, but I want to cover this now before I forget later, which is that the husband is awfully cool and forgiving.
Just the most understanding dude that's ever existed.
Like he knows she's an amnesiac. She's suffering from amnesia, and he accepts her for what she is. There's a scene where she's cutting, and he's like, "You better hurry up with those carrots." And out of nowhere, she's like the first time ever in 8 years this has happened where she's ever cut carrots, and it's like, "Look what I'm doing!" And it's this awesome, like, fun '90s cheesy like rom com montage where they're like, "What do we cut now?
Hand me something to cut." Yeah.
And then she throws a tomato up and stabs it into the wall, and then she goes, and chefs do that, and he's just like, and you can tell he's weirded out, but he's like kind of turned on too. Maybe that's it. He's like weirded out by this, but always also kind of like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would kind of like to examine his backstory a little bit, just because like if I met someone, if I were unattached, if I were not married to my beautiful wife, who I love.
Yeah, and you met somebody with a kid.
And I met someone with a kid.
Amnesia.
Well, she was pregnant.
Yeah, at
the time. And she was basically like, I don't remember a thing. I'd be like, well, good luck to you. fascinating. I'm gonna go this way.
But they had a connection. I would love to. I want to see the prequel to this movie where it's just a rom-com of an amnesiac, amnesia-stricken Gina Davis meeting this guy, and they're like, da, 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 we met, and then at the end this big reveal. But so what happens then, I just want to keep going with them.
Yes.
Because when the bad guy with the one eye breaks in and shoots, first he has a shotgun and he's holding these Christmas carolers hostage and making them sing so that she comes to the door instead of just kicking down the door. It's like they're the least... They're the most conspicuous villains ever, where it's like the whole premise of this is that the CIA is trying to cover up the fact that they're hiring villains to fight because they had budget cuts.
Right.
And we find this out in like the third act. But there's budget cuts, so they needed to hire old targets to help them out.
Yes.
And they're going to stage this terrorist attack to get more money.
Right.
Which, weirdly, isn't that far outside of potentially reality.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about how saw the future a little bit of like the specifics that they said. Not to mention, like, I didn't bring this up earlier, but they literally burned the bridge between America and Canada in this movie. They literally did that.
They did.
And now it's happening metaphorically. Yeah.
So it's funny how, like, so this guy with, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I want to focus on the husband-ish or boyfriend figure.
Yeah.
This guy shows up one eye, find out he got it stabbed out when he was trying to drug Charlie and kill her because they wanted her out. They were going to murder her. And then she got shot in the head and it grazed her or something, and she fell into the ocean and wound up on a beach. And nobody ever was like, that looks like a bullet graze wound. Like, that never came up. It was just like, wow, you must have hit your head on a rock, a bullet.
Were you in the water?
Yeah.
You go for a swim later.
She had
night?
Blonde hair, I think, in that. Yeah. So then she just turned it back to, like, her reddish hair.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's a lot of weird things that happen in the flashbacks. But don't get me wrong, I love this movie. And he comes in full shotgun, blasting everything. He shoots through a hole. He has a rocket launcher.
Yeah, yeah. Here was one question I had. Right. Well, A, where are the cops? So three questions. A, where are the cops? Yeah. B, if they want to get more money to fight terrorism and they've hired the bad guys, over the course of this movie, the bad guys do, like you said, several public displays of terror. Like, why isn't that good enough to get the funding? Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't need to then blow up Niagara Falls. Yeah. Like, we've opened fire in a train station. We've opened fire in a residential area.
Twice.
Just, like, a bunch of things where they might be like, you know what? There are some bad guys out there. Yeah. Here's some money. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
The third thing, his rocket launcher blows a hole through the house.
Yep.
10 seconds later, she uses the refrigerator door to block a bullet.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I think it was a bullet, though, not a rocket. I think because you have to reload the rocket in the... It's not
he
a,
was doing the same,
it's like a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
But I love that because he's just like... Because it's such a surprise, too. You don't know what's coming. He's shooting a shotgun, and then it's like... And it hits the wall. And then an amazing moment before she's fully realized her Charliness.
Right.
She's still just Ms. Kane. She picks up her daughter and flings her out, and perfectly the steps happen to line up exact. That hole lines up exactly with the door in the treehouse.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, it would have been amazing if her daughter, like, hit it and then, like, was, like, hanging on, like, and then the rest of the scene, she's trying to finish killing this bad guy and then has to go catch her daughter in, like, a spoof of this
that
movie.
Would have
I
been
can imagine
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's
or,
almost
or
a
like,
spoof.
The door to the treehouse was actually on another wall. And they like she had to like fling her and she like pancaked onto one wall and then had to like inch around to get to the door.
So then she the shotgun blast hits the kitchen. She hits him in the head. This whole thing builds up to all she has to do to take him out is crack him over the head with a glass pie
with
pan.
With a pie, yeah.
And then he's bleeding everywhere. She does this awesome like super punch to the back of his head and then cracks his neck. And then the husband's looking at her. And can we play sound clip number three? This actually is perfect. It led into sound clip number three.
Chefs do that.
Before she said it like a, chefs do that when she did the and this is like 15 minutes later, and there's already a callback joke, and it's so awesome, because the husband just kind of like, or the boyfriend's kind of like, And then my favorite thing is, I'm skipping all the way to the end because I want to cover the husband, or boyfriend, whatever he is. At the very end, he's just like hanging out with her after all this crazy shit's happened. Yeah. They're on a farm. No questions asked.
Well, to be fair, when she left to go chase down her identity, he did say to her, it doesn't matter what you find, I'm not afraid. Which, again, like, props to him.
Props to A.
Because I would have been like, no thanks.
You know what, though? I think that that's kind of subverting what they usually do with female characters in these movies.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, most action movies until recent... I mean, you know, there's been, like, the Underworlds and the Resident Evils of the world where there's a female hero. But, most action movies, if there is a girlfriend character, they're usually the damsel in distress. They're a side character. They're just there to kind of give some sort of emotional grounding to the hero and something for him to fight for. And usually the hero comes back after all the crazy shit's happened. And it's like, all right, we're not going to talk about it. And just everything's just forgotten.
And she's like, don't worry, the home is okay. Yeah. I've kept it pristine for you.
So that's what he is.
Yeah, so it's exactly right.
He's the guy Susie Homemaker is what he is, which is great. And I think that's awesome that they did this kind of subversion of stereotypes.
And it's really interesting also because they did that, but at the same time, like so much of her, like the interaction with her was men telling her how pretty she was.
Yeah.
Like, that was a lot of it.
Yeah.
And there was also, like, a moment towards the, like, three-quarter mark where I forget who it was, but someone was like, someone literally was like, you are very pretty. Yeah. As like, a calming mechanism for her.
But what was interesting is they had that cool little moment. I didn't get the sound clip for because it's a long dialogue between her and Sam Jackson where he, like, they're driving and he turns out the window and is like, damn, and checks out a jogger with huge boobs running. And she's like, oh, yeah, tits are neat. And, like, it was cool because in that moment, she calls out, like, the kind of lizard brain male where it's like, really? And he almost swerves off the road just because he's looking at a jogger. And I feel like men sometimes treat boobs like Pokemon where they got to see them all, where they're just like, you know, it's like, just because it's like, well, saw those. Check. I've seen guys at, like, the gym and things like that. That will position themselves differently at a mirror to get, like, views. And you're just like, you are staring, bro. I can see you.
There's also, like, there's an element of, like, display.
Not that I've never checked out a woman ever.
Necessary every single human that you come into contact with. But there's, like, an element of, like, showmanship and display where, like, you have to let other people know that you were checking it out. Where, like, because, like, he could have easily just been driving and, like, seen it and like said to himself, fuck yeah.
But I think that's
woo!
And like, it's just so I think that scene's a really funny deconstruction of kind of like the male and female stereotypes and how she calls him out for it.
Yeah.
But so now I want to go back a little bit in time to when Sam Jackson's introed because it's awesome.
Yeah.
he's pretending to be a vice cop. And he's pretending to bust this guy for being with a prostitute, played by Melina Kanakaritas. Shout out! She went to Firestone High School where I went to school.
Oh, shit. What's up?
The Black Keys, Melina Kanakaritas, and LeBron James. He didn't go to my high school, but like 20 minutes away from me.
And
this guy.
Frederick Douglass.
And Frederick Douglass, guys.
Who's getting more and more attention.
He's been doing a lot of great work. Frederick Douglass has been doing great work. So anyway... Sam Jackson's introduced, and he's busting this guy for sleeping with a prostitute, and he's like, well, I guess we can figure out something, and we find out that he's running a scam with her where she pretends to be a prostitute, he pretends to be a vice cop, and then they get money from these guys. And he's the PI that Gina Davis has hired to find. He's the cheap one she's hired. Mm-hmm. But his intro is fantastic. Can we play clip number two?
See, you're assuming I won't shoot your sorry ass, and everyone knows when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you. And
so good. Tell me that couldn't be from a Tarantino movie, though.
Yeah. Like I mean, that might have been just pulled from Samuel L. Jackson's life.
You make an ass out of you. You make an ass out of you. And umption.
And umption.
It's so good.
It's perfect.
It doesn't make any sense, but I love it so much. And that's kind of the snappy, fun, quirky Shane Black world you live in, you know?
Yeah. And just like slightly changing your expectation or like perspective on things.
Yeah.
Cause like ass out of you and me is the saying, right? But like, just like
it takes you off.
Yeah. Slight off balance.
And that's why it's fun.
And it's fun.
It's the same thing with like a David Mamet movie. Like I'll never forget in what's that movie with Gene Hackman where it's like hostage.
Enemy of the state.
Something. Anyways, the line is he's so cool when he goes to sleep, sheep count him. And I was like, that's such a weird line, but I love that. it was Ricky Jay that says that. Anyways, so we let's just skip ahead because the intro is kind of, it's a little bit of a slow build. Not really. It's like 15 minutes, but she's in a Christmas parade too, by the way. So this woman who has amnesia is full on display on a TV and it just happens to be playing at the prison where the one eyed guy that she stabbed in the eye is watching.
I had a little bit of a hard time with this. I don't need
how did he
like
get out of prison.
Yeah.
He's in a maximum security correctional facility
and he's in solitary. Like,
unless, okay, maybe he then made a call to his handler, that comedian lead villain guy, and was like, hey, she's alive. And they're like, all right, get him out of jail. Which in that case,
why didn't they get him out of jail before? Or if they couldn't, why didn't they just handle it? Cause then they just ended up trying to handle it anyway.
Yeah.
But like he was there solo in like the most spacious cell that's ever existed.
Like, they forgot to get extras that day for prison extras.
Yeah, they were like, all right, we need a cell packed full of 15 people. Perfect, we have the location. Did you get the people? Fuck, no.
Damn it,
all right,
I forgot the people.
Just the one guy then. Just the one guy. And he's watching TV because he has access to a TV, I guess.
In a cage, though. The TV's in a cage.
And the TV is broadcasting a local Christmas parade?
From another state, I think.
What?
From another... It seems like another state, unless they just happen to be in the same state.
Yeah.
There's so many questions.
So, like I said, I don't need everything to be airtight, but that particular thing is, like, as flimsy as could be.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So then, after the mayhem of the shootout and everything, mm-hmm. Sam Jackson happens to show up right after the shootout.
Yeah.
Because they found a lead on one of her old employees, her old landlord, and they found a whole box full of all of
her stuff. The place she was staying when she went missing. That landlord had all her stuff because she never came back, and they really liked it.
And then when they call, to her old boss, we don't know it's her boss at the time. We just think it's a friend or something. It's a contact she had. It's Brian Cox, and Brian Cox is introed with an amazing, quirky intro. Can we play clip number 4, please?
Well, what's wrong with the dog?
It's simple. He's been licking his asshole for the last 3 straight hours. I submit to you that there is nothing there worth more than an hour's attention. And I should think that whatever he is attempting to dislodge is either gone for good or there to stay.
So he's sitting there with his mom, presumably, at the dinner table.
Uh-huh.
And she has a dog that's just going to town on its butt.
Yeah.
And he says that his appetite and the dog's asshole are not mutually exclusive. And then he says that line, and what a hilarious intro. It's either gone for good or there to stay.
Which is
so
true.
Good.
Which is true.
Which I have the same thing when my dog, when I'm trying to watch TV and he just goes to town on his non-existent balls. Like, he's been fixed. He loves, like, licking the phantom balls. And I'm like, come on. It's disgusting. Disgusting.
Well, he's a dog.
You know, he's a dog.
My dogs do
the
same thing.
Those balls are gone for good.
Yeah, my dogs do the same thing. We have 2, and they will, like, simultaneously start licking, and
it's like
surround sound licking. It's like it's the grossest
Goop.
Sound in the world, and
it's
I
awful.
Would never let it go for 3 hours.
No.
That's
no, it's too
like,
much.
That's like a torture chamber.
It is a torture chamber.
At that point.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up something where she's rifling through her suitcase when they're... when they're figuring out things, and she in the hotel,
mm-hmm.
and she finds in like a little zipper, like the fake compartment. She opens it up for the first time in 8 years, and finds a rifle to assemble.
Yeah,
in there.
She was never like, this empty luggage weighs 25 pounds. That's interesting.
Unless it was Sam Jackson's, but they never set up that it was his luggage. And it seems like, why would he have such an expensive rifle? Because then she assembles it like it was hers.
And why would he have given his rifle to her to put her stuff?
Had they never gone on a family trip where she took that suitcase and TSA was like, whoa!
Right,
whoa,
yeah.
Can you open your suitcase, please? We need to check this.
No, it was things were a little more lax back then.
It was, okay. Yeah. That's how it was. And then they go to the,
but this just like immediately following this, when he's like, I'm taking you home. This is, I can't deal with this anymore. I don't want to go back to jail. And they start driving, and then they like appeal to one another's sensibilities, and he decides not to take her home. He decides instead to go to the train station.
Yep. Where they're going to meet Brian Cox.
They left the hotel on a whim in the middle of the night. They arrive at the train station. He says 10 minutes early. So what was their plan to get there on time? Like,
I don't know.
He was like, if she hadn't shot me, we would have left in 10 minutes anyway.
I don't know.
How far away was this train station?
It was
a day away.
At least a few hours.
I thought that was funny. Maybe they started driving and then they were like, all right, well, we're not going to go home. We might as well just find another motel.
I always love when they play fast and loose with that, with like when somebody will be running and they show the sunrise and they run out on a beach and then suddenly it's like broad daylight and you're like, whoa, that's not how fast sunrise.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Or it's something similar where people are like having a conversation, like they find a body and they're having a conversation and then like they get to the first, like they cut to get to the first witness's house and they're knocking on the door and they've continued the conversation that had just ended. It's like, were you guys just in silence for half an hour?
That's
like, why did you just start this conversation again?
Or whenever they're introing some, like, all right, I'm gonna take you on a walk through the station, and then the monologue continues through like clearly 7 different rooms where it's like, I have to pause for dramatic effect until we get in the next room.
That kind of stuff.
When they enter the train station, Samuel Jackson sets up, that's what I did in the beginning, that he sings so he remembers things. It's another quirk. And he's singing how to remember where he put his gun and his keys as they go into the train station. Can we play clip number 5, please?
Gun in the right hand side.
It makes a bulge. People can see.
You want me to stick it in my pants and shoot my damn dick off?
Now you're a sharpshooter?
So many good things in there. Because the funniest thing to me is that I've always thought that whenever you see like people in movies that have a gun in their waistband, that is playing with fire.
Yeah.
That is, literally.
Like, that's quite literally, yeah.
It takes is one wrong move. Shoot your damn dick off. And then the sharpshooter line is such a great button.
Not even like, sure, that's the worst case scenario, shooting your dick off, but mm-hmm. like, how uncomfortable is it to have a piece of metal sticking down your pants?
Yeah.
Like, that's not great.
No, it's not.
It would press on my bladder. I would have to pee all the time.
Yeah, I know you. You all have a hummingbird bladder.
Yeah, sure do. Even without a gun down my
pants.
I'm
trying to think of how to do any improv riffs off these. They're very long quotes so far. So sorry if there's not as many this time around, guys. They go to the train station. Bad guys show up. He talks to her, the main bad guy, which I don't remember because he's kind of forgettable. But he shows up and he's like...
I call him Stubble.
Stubble. I like Stubble. He shows up. He realizes she can't remember. And so their next logical step is, well, we might as well... She can't remember anything, so let's shoot her in broad daylight.
Right.
In front of hundreds of witnesses.
Let's not be covert about it.
And, you know, later on when Chapter, the black bag operation with CIA, is being praised by the government and this guy's given a medal, I'm sure there'll be no witnesses that can remember Stubble was there. So they start, there's a shootout in there, they're running up a hallway, and he's like, oh, I got 3 bullets left, I'm almost out. They make a plan. Can we play clip number 6? Because what happens is in this is a grenade gets dropped next to him, and this is what happens.
Just point and spray, okay? Ready? And... Fuck it! Run for your life!
Fuck it! Run for your life! And then they run out the hallway. The grenade blows up and causes the biggest fire burst I've ever seen.
Yeah.
From a... Because grenades... They blow up in, like, anything within, like, a 6-foot radius.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty contained.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, those specific...
Unless it was, like, a super, like, fancy grenade from the government, but it looked like a standard grenade.
Well, but, like, it stayed contained to the floor it was on. Like, it shot horizontally.
So
the fire was chasing them down the hallway.
They're running as this fire chases them down the hallway. She gets the idea to shoot through the glass... Shoot the glass, Die Hard. Yeah. And they slam through the glass. They're jumping out the window, and then she shoots the ice below, and they fall into hypothermia-inducing water,
mm-hmm.
and then run off from there. And again, it's one of those situations where it's like, what? It's that easy to just escape after that? Like, you're probably moving a little slow
you're
after.
Probably pretty cold.
Like, have you ever tried to? Have you ever tried to write when you come in from the cold?
Impossible.
Like, or, like, I've tried to, like, text on my phone after just California cold. So we're talking, like, low 40s.
Yeah.
And you're like... Egh.
Do anything at all with your hands. It's impossible.
Let alone drive a car.
Try to, like, open your door.
Nothing. Not going to happen.
So a couple of things with this. Actually, the main thing that I really enjoyed about the shootout in the train station is there are a couple of shots fired. Everyone in the train station realizes shots are fired. They freak out. Gina Davis starts running away,
uh-huh.
and they're firing at her. And the reason they miss is because their bullets catch a tower of bags being dollied. So there's a dude who's like, I understand there's a shootout, but these bags need to get to the fucking train because this is my goddamn job.
That's right.
And I'm committed to this.
It was at least a few gunshots in where this dude was still like... And there's, like, people getting mowed down in this,
people,
too.
Yeah, people, just go ahead and abandon those bags. You're probably okay. At least for the moment, you can come back to it.
No one's worried about their luggage right now.
No one's going to steal anything from those bags.
And if they do, I mean, that's the least of your worries right now.
Save yourself. But no, he's so committed to the job. He's like, I was asked to take these bags somewhere, and I'm going to do it.
So they get out. Oh, that's what happens. They get out, and then Brian Cox shows up and is like, get in. And then he's like, are you this person? He goes, no, I'm the something's baker. I forget. He says some little quippy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gina Davis is freaking out in the back seat. And she's like, this can't be true. I don't understand. And Brian Cox is a little tough love with her. Can we play clip number 7, please?
Samantha Cain never existed. You want the bloody thing.
No, it's not a fantasy.
I'm in the goddamn PTA.
Then quit. You're an assassin working for the United States government.
That's pretty intense.
It sure is.
I'm in the PTA. Then quit. I like that. You're an assassin working for the United States government.
I would like to submit the two are not mutually exclusive.
No.
Difference between PTA and government assassin and an appetite and a dog licking its ass.
Yeah.
Are that these two things.
Yeah.
Can be mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. You can be both.
You can be both.
You get, dare to dream.
Dare to dream. You know what I mean? Dare to dream. I'm trying to think of, still, these are all so like specific sound clips. It's very hard to be like, hey guys, so this one time when I was in the PTA and like this.
Oh, where are you happen, man?
I don't know.
Hey,
so,
were you also an assassin?
Apologies. Plus, we only have. What time do we have to officially be out of here, Anthony? Can you type it up there for me or tell me either way? 7:10?
Oh, 10:10.
We have 3 hours and 20 minutes still.
Rock the shit out of this 3 hour time block.
All right. Well, so then they're not really trusting Brian Cox. They don't know if he's legit or not, and they club him over the head with a crowbar. Oh, I got to do that. Oh, well, you know what? Before we get to that,
we might as well
do a quick break from our sponsor. This is a quick word from our sponsor. We're sponsored by Blue Apron, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't tried Blue Apron, it is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And it basically makes home cooking accessible to everybody, including people like me. I am terrible when it comes to cooking because I go to the grocery store and I forget ingredients. I get just the main thing and I don't know what else to get. This gives you the exact portions to your door and it doesn't waste any food. It's very environmentally friendly.
Let me just say, it's very impressive that you go to the grocery store with a list of ingredients because I just go and get like refrigerated pasta canned soup.
Microwavable stuff.
The last time I bought a vegetable at the grocery store was like 2008.
I have a kid now. But so here's the thing. So
there you go.
But also everything is responsibly farmed. The seafood is sourced sustainably. So it's all very environmentally conscious, which is really cool to me. You're not getting a lot of GMOs. You're not getting any kind of additives that you don't need. And it's delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 95% of food deserts. I don't know what that means, but there's deserts where foods don't exist. So they ship, like I said, the exact amount of ingredients that you need. And it's, I have found that cooking with my wife, it's a fun little date night, too. And I'm not BSing you guys. It's a fun date night. It's cheaper than going out to eat. You don't spend $50 or $60. It's under $10 a person for these meals. It's great. They have cashew chicken stir fry, which is awesome. The roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. Come on, man.
They're all like
farro salad. Have you ever had it? It's fantastic.
All the recipes are delicious. I legitimately have a Blue Apron box at my house right now. And I made cumin-coated pork.
See?
Today with
when would you have made that? With
fennel and farro and a fig sauce.
Get out of here with
those are three ingredients I've never once in my life purchased. It was so delicious and so good.
Get out of here.
Yep.
They have a guarantee that promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook and they'll make it right. You get each meal is 40 minutes or less, which is huge for me. I hate sitting and waiting to cook stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free. First three meals free, free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/guilty. You'll love how good it feels to taste all these good ingredients. You can cook it with your wife, your girlfriend, your friends, whatever. Blueapron.com/guilty. Blue Apron, a better way to cook, ladies and gentlemen.
Even if you live in a food desert.
Yes, even if you live in a food desert. Look at that. Yes.
Boom.
I did it live read so well. It didn't go anywhere. Yes. No, Blue Apron's awesome. That's no joke. Sometimes you have to say stuff that you don't believe in, but I actually think that this is something that's really cool.
Blue Apron is really cool. Yeah.
It's really cool.
And like I said, we use it. We have it right now.
It's great. So there you go. And it makes my life easier with a 12-week-old. So if you're a new dad, it makes your life easier. Anyways, back to the show. Now that we've done our sponsor break, where were we? Brian Cox gets clubbed over the head with a crowbar.
Yeah.
And gets up pretty unfazed.
Well,
he's pretty much like, that was annoying. That's kind of his reaction. Like, no.
So we've learned crowbar
can
inflict small damage. Pie in the face.
It was a glass.
Can debilitate you.
Glass pan.
I choose to believe it was the pie that did the damage.
Yeah, I liked it. Cream pie. There's a Three Stooges sketch that went horribly wrong.
Yeah.
So then they go to David Morse's house. Is that the dude's name?
Yeah,
he's great. He's a great actor. She thinks he might be her fiance.
Yeah.
Because it was she found a postcard.
Because he seems like kind of a nice guy.
Super sweet.
Gave her a big hug.
And then Brian Cox shows up, puts a gun to Sam Jackson's head, and he's like, how'd you find it? And he's like, well, in the jacket that you put over my head and then clubbed me with a crowbar with, you had a notepad that that had these things, and that's what the address was on. Can you play clip number 8, please?
I found the address in your coat. Here, between the address of a topless bar and the picture of what looks like a man's penis.
That's a duck, not a dick.
What looks like a man's penis? It does.
It does.
The duck has stubble.
To be fair, it looks a lot more like a penis than it looks like a duck.
It does. It does. And your question would be,
yeah, why were you drawing a duck?
What, maybe it was like he's taking a beginning artist class, and like their first sketch is like, try and draw a lifelike duck.
So this is like character work, like, on Samuel L. Jackson's hobbies. He's like, yeah, I like my passion
how
is
did
to
the
be
joke
a PI,
come up?
But what I really want to focus on in my downtime is drawing ducks.
I just don't know where this joke came from. I feel like Sam Jackson or the art department had just drawn that as a joke, and then it seems like it had to have come up with in the moment. Like, it doesn't seem like something that could have been scripted.
It doesn't really,
because it's
yeah.
such a random,
it doesn't
awesome
fit
detail.
Really, but it is great.
It's so funny. That's a duck, not a dick. You know.
I wish it had been like that's a parrot. Not like something that wasn't alliterative at all.
That's
like,
a parrot,
really,
not a
like,
penis.
That like didn't make sense at all. Like, that's a toucan.
That's a toucan.
Something real specific.
A toucan, not a taint.
Yeah.
Jesus. Then Sam Jackson. So then they get.
You can't transition from that's a toucan, not a taint,
yes,
in any effective way.
Yes,
so we're
can.
Just gonna
we're just gonna just
we're
put
just gonna
the gears
take
in and go,
one giant step for mankind.
At least we didn't say it during the live read.
Yep.
They get kidnapped. She gets tied up to, what do you call those things? Not a windmill, but like a water mill thing. Water turbine. I don't know. Whatever.
I have no idea what its official name is.
She's in her like a slip somehow. Yeah. They just found a nice like old like 1940s slip to wear under a dress for her to be in.
Well, they wanted her to be
maybe
more comfortable.
She was under,
while
yeah,
she was being
I don't
tortured.
Know. Maybe she was, and she's being turned in there and like water torture and freezing water, and that's when her Charlie starts unlocking in her mind, feasibly from her brain cells dying or something. I don't know. And we found out Brian Cox is just dead.
He's there.
He died off camera, and he's now in the water.
Well, they didn't even torture him. They just drowned him.
And then for some reason, in every time they get Sam Jackson, they don't kill him. They just, in this instance, they beat him up and put him naked in a basement, which was weird. It's like, what were you... What?
Well,
why did you do that?
It's so funny because like almost every one of the characters we spend 2 minutes with in this movie, I desperately want to see a movie about those characters. Like, someone tied Samuel L. Jackson up naked in a basement, and like, why did like?
What was
I would
their
love
thing?
To know. They were just like, that is one chiseled man. I would love to see you naked in my basement, but I don't trust you.
Don't get
I'm
it.
Gonna have to tie
I
you
don't
up.
Get it.
Yeah.
So she's drowning. She's kind of like we don't know what's we don't know how she's gonna get free. But she remembers the gun in the crotch of Brian Cox's character.
Yeah.
Because he mentions that earlier, how
he
always
carries
three guns.
He carries three.
She jimmies her hand free, pulls it up, and in slow motion, she comes up screaming, just blasts away at David Morse, and then she frees herself. Presumably, finds her clothes somewhere in the watershed thing.
She spends a lot of time today in the water.
Yeah, lots. And I'm really worried about her health. Like, yeah. Hypothermia is a terrible
it's
thing.
It's winter time.
So she then we see in a really cool shot where Sam Jackson's naked on the ground and looks up. We see her come in and we hear shadows and we hear her shooting everybody, and then she opens up the door and he's free again. And then they go to a hotel where she bleaches her hair blonde. Mm-hmm. She's full on Charlie now. And she tries to start seducing Sam Jackson, and you're like, oh man, are they gonna fuck? Because like, he has a wife and kid, even though they're separated. Because by the way, he went to jail for petty theft, which we completely glossed over.
Yeah,
but that's just
it's not important.
It's one of those things where they did it just to ground him in something.
Right.
Can we play clip number 9? Because this is what he says to tell her: No, you can't have
none of this. Sweetheart, I ain't handsome. I ain't rich. And the last time I got blown, candy bars cost a nickel.
What point did candy bars cost a nickel? Because that's a long time to not get blown.
It's either a long time ago or it's the day after Valentine's Day when all the candy goes on sale.
That might be what it is. I think
so
you're
maybe
right.
Maybe he remembered the specific day and he was like,
you know, I've gone through some dry spells.
Have you?
In my life? Yeah. And I took up a hobby.
Drawing ducks?
No, I took up a hobby, glass blowing
oh.
for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, trying to dye this in. And, you know, I did a hobby with glass blowing, and then I had a dry spell from glass blowing. And
those are the worst.
And my wife and I, we decided to do like a what is it, a pottery, the paint night thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were like, do you want to have a pre-made glass thing, or do you want to blow your own? And I looked at the teacher, and I was just like, can we play?
Real sweetheart. I ain't handsome.
Not.
I ain't rich.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Last time I got blown, candy bars cost a nickel.
Because it had been a while since I'd blown some glass.
Yeah,
that was
it
such
sure
a reach.
Had been. No, it wasn't.
I'm glad that one improv I've done was so solid.
Well, do you know what's crazy? I was like, it was it was this past summer.
Uh-huh.
It was like super, super hot day.
Yeah.
And I was waiting in the DMV.
Oh,
which is,
well, you got to get AAA. Then you don't have to do
I know
that.
I should, but I like torturing myself,
yeah,
I guess. But I was sitting in the DMV, and it was so hot. There's no air conditioning. There was just one single oscillating fan.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had, it was right next to the security guard. So I watched someone go up to the security guard, give him $20, and they just sat in front of the fan and got all the air.
Yeah.
And I went up to them, and I was like, excuse me, do you mind if I just get a little bit of air blown on me? And they were like, no, I paid for this. And I was like,
get real, sweetheart. I ain't handsome. I ain't rich. And the last time I got blown, candy bars cost a nickel.
Just to try and appeal to their sensibilities.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Mm-hmm. So, let's keep going because we got about 10 minutes left. And we got a lot to cover, so holy shit. Okay, so she goes back to her, Charlie's kind of like, fuck it, I don't care about my daughter, I don't care about anything anymore, I'm just going to get out of here, I got money in a safe deposit box, or in a somewhere, who cares. She has to go get the key that's on her daughter's charm bracelet. She goes back there to get it. She immediately is followed, because they tapped the phone or something, I can't remember, and she's followed by the bad guys, and they end up on the ice, where her daughter gets kidnapped, right?
Yes.
Yes. And they end up, the bad guys, the car ends
well,
up
these,
on the...
So these are happening simultaneously. Yes. She is breaking into her house to
get the
key, and the daughter is in the play.
Yeah, the play.
The nativity play.
And she gets...
And she's getting...
She gets gassed.
Yeah, she's getting gassed.
Yeah.
And then the guy threatens... He threatens the other mother. She sees
with
him.
With a knife.
He threatens her with a knife, and he goes, you're about to have 2.4 kids.
And I'm like, what? What does that mean?
How did you do the math on that?
What does that mean?
What, are you referring to a family pet as 0.4 kids? I don't get it.
So they kidnap the daughter, and she puts on ice skates and is ice skating along the frozen lake, and she... While ice skating, blasts these three dudes in a car, kills them.
Yep.
The daughter gets taken away. Let's fast forward because we only have a few minutes left. Man, let's fast forward. She gets to this weird hotel lodge in the middle of nowhere.
Right. So at this point, she's grappling with, because they call her on the way.
Yeah.
She's grappling with, because she has decided, I'm going to abandon my 8 years with this man and my daughter, and I'm going to go back to being an agent for the government, mm-hmm. which is who I am and what I want. She's grappling between that and being the family woman that she's grown accustomed to being. And these two different personalities are sort of at odds at this point.
And they get to this, long story short, they get to this lodge in the middle of nowhere where they're planning this attack around Niagara Falls.
Yep.
They're going to blow up this truck and blame it on a dead Muslim that they have. Ooh, racist. Anyways, they have this dead, frozen Muslim random dude that they're just going to crash his car somewhere else, so they pin it on him so they can get more funding for the CIA. She's trapped in a freezer, again, like a Bond villain. They just put her in a freezer with her daughter and turn it to like a negative 40.
They turn the freezer to negative 40.
Which is like, would kill him really quick.
What needs to be frozen at negative 40 degrees?
Exactly, one freezer. So she starts hammering away with like a crowbar, and gets this little area. She takes her daughter's retainer out, puts it there. She's filled up while they were in this other area getting shot at with gasoline. She's filled up her daughter's doll with gasoline and makes it pee out gas, lights it. It blows up the gas all around that just happened to be out. And it blows up the building, launches Sam Jackson out of the window through the sign of the motel, hits a tree, and he gets up and he dusts himself off. And can we play clip number 10? That's it. And he's fine. We got to keep moving a little bit because then they show the Christmas parade. The bad guys are in the truck. She tells her he's going out there to try and save the girl. He gets shot a bunch of times. You think he's dead. She's trying to snipe guys. Her daughter hides. She's like, go hide, honey. She hides in the worst possible place.
This is my favorite part. She goes, go hide. And then the daughter runs. And immediately she's like, Caitlin? Caitlin? It's like, why did you go tell her to hide?
And you're going to immediately worry about it. In the toolbox of the truck that's going to explode.
Yeah.
So they go driving off. There's shootouts, cars, everything, blah, 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 bam, bam. And then she ends up, she gets the truck from the dude. She's driving it, Gina Davis, and she's going to smash it through a wall, which I don't know how that's not going to hurt her daughter in a toolbox. And as she smashes it through the wall, right before that, can we play clip number 12? Suck my dick, every one of you bastards. Boom! Meanwhile, the bad guys are in hot pursuit, and the bad guy has one of my favorite one-liners. Can we play clip number 11?
Sir, she's got the truck. She's headed out of town. I'm hurt real bad. I think I'm dying.
Continue dying. Out.
Continue dying. Out.
So, I like how he punctuates it with out. Like, he's done with the conversation.
So she's trying to see. So, all right, no, we have like 2 minutes, not even. So she's trying to. There's so much in the end of this movie. I wish we had more time. She's trying to free her daughter from the truck after it's crashed on the bridge. The helicopter comes with the bad guy. She shoots the one dude. He had a flare gun for some reason.
Yep.
And it fires off, catches him on fire. He gets tangled up in some Christmas lights. Sam Jackson is alive again, shoots out of the car and gets there and parks. He's like, Charlie! And he's like yelling for her to come with him. The bad guy swoops around again. She cuts the cord of Christmas lights and somehow it launches her because the guy is attached to the other in the flaming body.
Pulley system.
Yeah, pulley system. But I don't think that would work that way. The Christmas lights would pull her up.
One of the simple machines that Rube Goldberg used.
Yeah. So she gets pulled up and she just unloads on the bad guy with her machine gun screaming. Can we play clip number 14?
Die, screaming motherfucker.
Which he does.
He does.
Well, he's not dead yet because nobody dies right away in this movie.
He need to be exploded to die
right
away. First
off, he already falls into like a chute that leads him to the Niagara Falls.
Yep.
He climbs out of that, ends up in the helicopter, gets shot a whole bunch of times with a machine gun, lands on top of this truck that's going to blow up the semi. Sam Jackson drives them out as it's counting down. Everybody's like, get back. It's the biggest bridge explosion in the history of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guy's on top of it. He explodes.
But he's not dead yet.
No,
Little pieces of him follow them.
He's not the T-1000. And the bridge explodes, and they're going through the customs checkout. That explodes. The back of their car blows up, and they survive it. And then we cut to Sam Jackson's on TV, and that's the one thing she wanted from the government. She doesn't want to work for the government anymore, but she wants him to get his name cleared and be a TV celebrity now for everything that happened. Mm-hmm. And so his wife and daughter are like, he's a hero. And then she's just on the farm with her family.
But his wife and daughter are watching him, and they're like, he's a hero. And he makes some joke about how he, like, two times women in two different cities.
Yeah, super
and
weird.
Larry King's like, what?
Yeah. And then Gina Davis ends up on a farm, and it's pretty amazing. And I do want to end on one clip because I forgot to play Sam Jackson when he comes back from the dead. Can we play clip number 13? And this is all we have time for.
That's right. You can't kill me, motherfuckers.
Yes.
He's not wrong.
And you can't kill this movie because it's so awesome.
It is so great.
Apologies. We didn't get to do as many riffs this time. There's too much fun stuff to talk about in this movie for 45 minutes. This movie is ridiculous. It's so fun.
I had a great time.
I really did.
I honestly don't know how I missed it when it came out.
Add this to
great.
Your Christmas movie, your kind of like off-kilter Christmas movie list, your anti-Christmas movie list, because it's fun, and it's not too violent. It doesn't take itself too seriously. I mean, it's violent, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's a good time. Next week, we're debating between Red Dawn and maybe something else, but we'll announce our movie very soon. Jesse, until then, where can they find you?
At Too Much Jesse on Twitter and Instagram. Prom Losers for Sketch. We just put out something for Valentine's Day, so check it out on YouTube. Search Prom Losers.
At The Ben Begley on Twitter and Instagram. At Funhouse Mass for The Funhouse Massacre, the movie my wife and I wrote. And Jesse and I, we used to do a sketch group a while ago. If you want to check out some vintage Jesse and Ben Ben comedy, look up Dinghis Khan comedy on YouTube. Dinghis Khan, D-I-N-G-H-I-S Khan comedy. We'll tweet out a link to it as well, so you can check it out. There's some funny stuff on there. We're going to start dropping some new stuff very soon. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, what is your guilty movie pleasure?
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.